Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Good Saturday morning. Hey, as we're recording this, we're watching the aftermath of the most incredible election of my lifetime. So many things have happened that we really need to stop and take stock. And never before, like 4 years ago, never before had we had a president twice impeached, or claims of massive voter fraud, or what they called an insurrection looked kind of like, you know, grandma walking through the Capitol building on January 6th, and we had this big commission in Congress, and we deplatformed a president from social media, which is kind of amazing. Then we had a new president that came in. And that new president who came in, he was forced to withdraw from the race when he was running for re-election, and he was replaced by his vice president, who hadn't won a single primary, hadn't even gotten a single primary vote. You know, it's just a really unusual time. You know, she was considered the worst vice president in history, worse than even Dick Cheney, who was the second worst vice president in history, who, by the way, endorsed. I mean, there's so many unusual things that have happened, including two assassination attempts, I mean, one of which shot the president's ear. It's just unbelievable what we're dealing with. Lawfare, a raid on a former president's home, you know, all of these charges that were brought up that'll probably be quickly dismissed. You know, it's crazy. And then President Trump, through all of that, had probably the greatest political comeback in the history of the United States, winning not only the Electoral College, but also winning the popular vote, which is something a Republican hasn't done in quite a while. So we're going to talk about all that. And joining me this morning is the great Mike Carter, terrific friend. We're going to be talking analysis of what happened in the election, and we'll be talking about how we plan ahead for what we ought to be doing with that. Welcome, Mike.
It's just exciting to be here today after this week and seeing really the historic events that have happened this week. If you care about liberty, security, and values, I believe we are on a path to reinforce those things. Some of the pundits I've seen speaking throughout this week, the election coverage, it's been interesting. It's been fun to watch and see the different views. And so it'll be good today to just kind of talk and get your perspective on what you saw.
Were you as nervous as I was going into that? I mean, I watched every state and I was expecting ballot drops. You know what? She won fewer black voters than Biden. She won, you know, all of these things. But you know what? She really didn't. She had 15 million fewer ballots dropped in the middle of the night.
Yes. I kept watching that. Are they going to bring in mail-in ballots? What's happening here? As we saw, more and more states, more and more counties turning red. And you know, it was fun. I like to watch through the different channels, whether it's MSNBC, CNN, Fox News. Good to get perspectives from all sides. But I thought this stood out from Van Jones. This is a shock. The Republican Party is now a party of multiracial working class. The federal government is not at the front of this fight anymore. That's coming from Van Jones.
That is an amazing statement. Trump has formed a different coalition than ever before. And I'll tell you what happened. In my opinion, we faced a color revolution in America. Communist Marxists had planned to take over our nation, and they'd attempted to do it. They used COVID as the excuse. They won the election in 2020, but the American people rejected that. They rejected it based on liberty, security, and values. And the theme that kept going through my head, Mike, was Goliath's head has been chopped off. Nobody was willing to stand up to him until Donald Trump, who was David,
yes,
you know, and chopped off that. That does not mean there aren't other giants out there. David had cut off Goliath's head, but there were four other giants. He had four brothers. And then it was up to the Israel's army to chase out the Philistine army and put them to flight. And I think that's where we are right now, is we have to chase out the Philistine army and the color revolution.
Yeah. So it's not a matter of, I think we, many people fell into this trap in 2016. Okay, well, Trump won. He's aligned with my values. So I can just sit back and watch him do his thing now. It's not going to be that way. We've got to all be taking our part and doing our part with this.
No, and it's a coalition. It's the Elon Musk coalition, former Democrat. It's RFK Jr. coalition and Naomi Wolf, who we have coming up next week, I think, on this program.
Yes.
You know, it is all of those things. And it's young people. And I think young people jumped into this fray. You know, Donald Trump excites young people to a certain degree, but I think what really put him over the top was Tony Stark endorsing him. I mean, Elon Musk endorsing him. And they realized this is a guy that's changing the world with artificial intelligence, with electric cars, with SpaceX, with, you know, all of the different things that he's done. You know, he's exciting.
And young people want a hope in a future, though. You know, we had Charlie Kirk on talking about what it looks like for you if we see liberty, security, and values happening. It can be a great America again. You can own a home again. You don't have to lower your standards, lower your expectations out there. And I think the young people were grasping that as well and saying, wait a second. Well, I want what my parents were able to do.
And they couldn't get it with the massive inflation. Inflation was three times higher under Biden than it was under Trump. Incomes were slashed. You know, we had massive income growth under Trump, and we had a decline in income under Biden. And the U.S. government got into serious debt, so they weren't going to be able to make all these promises. She made all these promises. We'll help you be a first-time home buyer. Well, what home would you buy? Washington Post put up an article, Young Americans Must Shrink Their American Dream. How many people want to buy a townhome rather than a home with a yard and puppy and all of that?
Right. No, it all plays into it. And everybody wants to have that vision for what America was built around. And I think we're seeing people realize that can be real. We don't have to do with less. We don't have to change our expectations. We need to make America great again, as Trump likes to say. That's what we were founded upon.
And we're not headed in that direction. I mean, no. I woke up the morning, election morning, I woke up, took a friend to breakfast. And when I got my bill for what would have literally been $20 or $25 for the two of us 3 or 4 years ago, it was $55. $55 for two people to have eggs and coffee and toast. I mean, this is just nuts. And that was at a standard breakfast. I wasn't going to the Ritz-Carlton. It would have been $200 at the Ritz-Carlton.
One of the shows I was watching post-election was, well, you know, this is the post-COVID inflation. There's nothing that Kamala could have done about this post-COVID inflation. We've seen other political parties lose because of this. But it's not post-COVID inflation. It's policy that causes this stuff to happen.
It's post-Inflation Reduction Act inflation.
Exactly.
I mean, they literally called their signature economic plan, Bidenomics, the thing she wouldn't have changed. One thing she said, yeah. They called it the Inflation Reduction Act, and yet that was the cause of the inflation that we're facing.
Yes, yeah. And you start to look at that, and then that gets back into mandates. And so then the other thing that I was hearing from some of the pundits out there was, well, is this administration going to overplay their mandate? Well, it appears when you look at the number of red counties out there, there is a mandate. We saw probably Biden overplay his mandate, but then they were worried about what's this going to mean to a green economy out there, and have we lost that? What do you think is going to happen?
You know, the idea that Biden thought he had a mandate was because he had 80 million votes, 81 million votes. No candidate in history has ever gotten that many. There's something really funny about that number. I'm not saying it was fraud, but it was because everybody was sequestered in their homes and they were sent mail-in ballots without any signature verification.
There was a lot of mail-in
that.
Ballots circling around that aren't necessarily accounted for from that perspective. And if you look at the elections, the two elections before that was 60, 65 million, 80 million. Now I see Trump's climbed up to about 71 million of the popular vote.
Trump is about where he was. Very similar to where he was 4 years ago, but Harris dropped 20 million ballots, 20 million lower. I don't know. There's something. It was 60 million, 60 million. I think this is where America is. 71 million that believe in liberty and 60 million that believe in government, in government control. All right. The government spending as much on debt service as they are on defense. People are looking at that, the dollar's being questioned, but you know the stock markets roared in response to the announcement that Trump had won and won decisively. There's not going to be any questioning, and she conceded the race. You know, so on a liberty basis, economic liberty, personal liberty, I think we are seeing a big move, a positive move with the Trump administration. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about security.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and we're talking this morning about the election and the implications it has for our lives. We broke it down into three areas: liberty, security, and values. And then we're going to talk about some things that we'll be doing going forward that I think will make a real difference in our country in all three areas: liberty, security, and values, if we get our pirate money legislation passed in the states. But let's start with the whole notion. Mike, did you see California, Blue California, repudiate George Soros and all the things that Kamala Harris, when she was the number one cop, right, in California, and she got this proposition put in place, Prop 47, passed in 2014 when she was the attorney general. Did you see what California did to that?
Yeah, I saw they reversed it, and she didn't want to come out and say how she voted on that, which I thought was, I thought maybe she'd come out post-election now. I don't know.
But she really couldn't. She couldn't come out because she had supported it when she was the attorney general. It was passed on her watch, and it passed with, you know, and now it was a disaster. She couldn't come out and say she supported repealing it. She couldn't come out and say she supported keeping it. I mean, it was a disaster. It had, what is it? If you stole something less than $950, it was just a misdemeanor and nobody would even try you. They wouldn't even arrest you. And so people were just walking into Walgreens and just grabbing stuff off the shelf.
Everything's on sale. Yeah, walk in. Nothing can happen to me. It's crazy policy. But, you know, we saw a lot of strange policies that relates to security out there, economic security, personal security, all that stuff. She was proposing unrealized taxes on unrealized capital gains. I mean, talk about taking away from any type of feeling of economic security. That would be a concern.
Oh, my gosh. You know what that do to a family? If you owned a farm, a family farm or family business of any kind, and it happened to go up in value, not in real terms, not when you could actually sell it, but you get your property tax statement on your house and it's all of a sudden your house is worth, you know, do you really believe it's worth the numbers that they tell you? No. And that, so they do an appraisal and they say, well, you know, your business is worth X number of dollars. Well, how are you going to pay that tax? You sell off just a chunk of the business? How are you going to get the money to pay off the gain? And then you'll never be able to grow your business.
Yeah. And people will not want to start new businesses. It's going to hurt corporations. It's going to hurt entrepreneurs.
It'll hurt the stock market, yeah. But they're not doing it. Trump is no
Thank
way
goodness.
He's doing that.
Thank
right?
goodness. But then if they didn't get that, then they also said, well, we got to take these price controls and control what happens in the markets out there. We've seen that doesn't work either.
Yeah, no, economic security, I think we've got a big win. You know, but I think the number one issue, inflation may have been the number one issue, but what's the other possible number one issue?
Immigration.
The border. Yeah, no question. The border. So Texas is actually preparing for a potential border surge after the election because look what's happened under Biden era, Biden-Harris era versus Trump era. You know, the average monthly border crossings during Biden's administration with Harris as the border czar, whether she denies it or not, she was the border czar, 238,363, according to the border control. U.S. Border Control, versus during Trump, it was 62,030. So they quadrupled the number of people crossing the border. And a bunch of those were military-age males.
Yeah, yeah. Again, thinking through on some of the pundit commentary the other day, too much abortion wokeness, not enough focus on immigration, inflation, economy, and the crime. All those are kind of major security issues that they just kind of left off what their proposals were, their policies.
Here's what I believe happened. There's hand wringing among the Democrats now. We went too far. Mm-hmm. We tried too much and the people rejected it. We've got to do it slower. What they did was the frog is in the kettle and they turned it from 120 degrees to 400 degrees instantly, and he felt it, and we jumped out.
Yeah, yeah, and I heard over and over again from those speaking about Democrat policy at the time, they weren't listening to pain points. I mean, this is marketing and branding 101, understanding your customer, understanding who's voting for you, understanding who's buying your product. And they did not address any of those pain points. They ignored them and said, no, believe your lying eyes. You know, the border is secure. Nobody's coming across. Well, I see them coming across, you know. And Governor Abbott did great things when all of a sudden he started taking all these illegal immigrants that were in Texas and saying, well, let's put them in some other states out there.
But here's the thing. Texas, I mentioned this earlier, Texas braces for a potential border surge after the election because they know that unless the border is closed, they know under Trump it will be closed. So if you're trying to get in, you're coming right now.
Yes, yes. Well, that could be a little concerning security-wise. I mean, we still don't know who's coming across. And is there going to be a surge? Is there going to be, you know, some even not so good terrorist folks saying, all right, now's the time
to
get
in. And once you get it, we had John Guandolo on this program, and he was talking about the risk that the people, when is 0 hour? Maybe it's when you're not going to pull 0 hour when the border's open and you can keep getting more people in. You're going to pull it when the border gets closed. So that is something that we're going to have to watch out for from a security standpoint going forward. But I say overall, I'm willing to close the border and take that risk rather than allow another 10 million undocumented people. Did you notice Harris, though, in her closing argument, she got out there, distanced herself from Biden. In fact, she didn't even really thank President Biden much at all in her concession speech. She distanced herself from Biden. She sent out her surrogate, the governor of Colorado, who came out and said, you know, this is a new era. We get rid of Trump and Biden, and it's a new era. From the woman who said she wouldn't change a single policy. Well, in the closing days of the campaign, she was saying things like, if you're here unlawfully, I will deport you. Wait, what? Why are they here unlawfully? She let them in.
Yeah, yeah. It defies logic. There's no logic behind any of what happened, other than it's logical that we saw the groundswell support that we did in this last election.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about security from another standpoint. You mentioned economic security. How about energy security?
Oh, yeah. Pennsylvania on the board there heavily, and we saw that play into it. I think Montana, we had some energy issues and things about there. Other states, very focused on that. And
Texas had a bigger win than you'd expect. Yeah. North Dakota, energy, Oklahoma, energy-producing states said, no, we don't trust her when she says, I won't ban fracking, because she said, I absolutely will. And when you say one thing and then you say another thing, well, this is the woman who had two ads, speaking of security. One ran in Michigan that said, basically, we're going to curb Israel's, what they're doing in Gaza. We're going to pull them back. And then the one that ran in Pennsylvania, where there are a large Jewish population and a Jewish governor, that ad, running at the same time, said, you know what? We will never stand in the way of Israel defending herself.
Yeah. Yeah. That does a lot to give you credibility and trust, doesn't it?
Yeah, no. And
not like there aren't politicians on both sides that do that all the time, but that was very much in your face.
Well, another one very much in your face is you can see the clips where she's sitting there talking to someone who says, you know what? If you have guns, we may just enter your house and check your weapons. And she said that in California. And then what did she say? She says, no, I have a gun. If you come into my house, I'm going to shoot you.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, she said that. Yeah. And then she said, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that. And my staff will have to clean that up. She said it. And bottom line is, I think the American people said, I want to be safe. Women said, I prefer safety over these other issues that, you know, I'm not voting for you just because you're a woman. I want somebody who's going to keep America and our children safe.
Yeah, yeah. And Kevin, you're a national security expert. As we talk about that security piece, already we're seeing shifts in governments out there saying, okay, Trump's in charge. We're going to kind of change our posture here. What do you think that means on the national security front?
Well, if Iran is developing a nuclear weapon, they're going to race to get it before Trump gets in office, and they'll probably be afraid. Remember, this is the same basic Iranian government that the minute that Reagan was elected, they released the hostages. I would not be surprised to see Hamas releasing hostages and saying, finally. I mean, Trump got a big proportion of the Muslim vote because they say we want peace in the Middle East, and Trump has got the best path to get it. And the best path to get it is not the concessions that Biden was put. I mean, he was talking out of both sides of his mouth. Harris was talking about out of both sides of her mouth. Trump is serious, and he means, I want to get a fair deal for both sides, and let's get this done.
Yeah, and I heard Ukraine and Putin and Russia both saying, we're willing to talk now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
Yeah, and don't give me this that Trump is beholden to Putin or the Russians put him in power. I don't want to hear any of that nonsense. That wasn't true 4 years ago or 8 years ago, I guess. It isn't true today. Putin did not put President Trump in power. Who did? Hardworking American citizens put him in power, and he knows who he owes allegiance to. He always has that allegiance. Yeah.
And the Middle East, we're seeing Saudi Arabia kind of reaching out now. Other people are saying, okay, we need to kind of keep an eye on what's going on. And people are posturing with this new type of leadership, which reminds me a little bit of the Reagan era, is that peace through strength. And it works.
Yeah, I wish Trump had a little more of Reagan's personality and likability and so forth. But he does mean business. And I'll tell you what, it is hard. I'm looking at this Newsweek article that came out earlier this year, August of this year. Biden nuclear security official called for queering of nuclear weapons. No more of that nonsense. If you're Putin and you see that article in Newsweek, you're like, oh, these guys are soft. Mm-hmm. We gotta attack them. If you're Iran, if you're anybody, Trump will get in and say, no, a nuclear weapon, I don't care what its gender is.
It
doesn't matter. We have them. And we will use them if we have to, and we hope we never do.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think he is in no way a warmonger. But he is not going to put up with garbage.
Yeah, and I expect.
Well,
we're
wait a minute. I take that back. He put on the safety vest.
He's cleaning up the garbage.
He is cleaning up the
and
garbage.
And hopefully, we'll see that happen in D.C.
Yeah. So we're looking at Second Amendment gains for owning your own firearms and maintaining the Second Amendment. We're looking at a rebuilt military that's not on wokeness. I imagine he's going to clean house. We talked to Alan West in the Economic War Room, and he said he's going to clean house with admirals and generals who are all political beings that didn't care anything about the security of the United States. They were globalists, and they liked their padded payrolls.
Yeah, as he appoints those cabinet people, it's commissioning because they were the ones that said, well, we're going to be the guardrails. We're going to keep Trump on a track here. And literally they said, hey, we're going to confer with each other before we let Trump do anything that we don't agree with. That's not constitutional.
I would love to see Alan West in the Trump administration, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes, yes.
And we talked with Michelle Bachmann, too. And you know what? I think Michelle Bachmann is the ideal person to be ambassador to the United Nations. She is one of the most popular Americans in all of Israel, and she would clean house. You know, she had a ministry to the United Nations with her friend Jim Garlow.
Yeah, no, fabulous, fabulous person. And it's going to be so much fun to see the team that Trump puts together this time, especially with the knowledge of what he had in those first 4 years in 2016. What did he learn from that? How does he build his team this time, and what do they do?
He absolutely learned from that. He's got to have loyalty, but he doesn't want uniformity of thought. He's willing to bring in RFK Jr. He's willing to bring in an Elon Musk who may disagree with him on some issues. Look, we have an exciting 4 years ahead. We got to get there and be safe. And part of that is protecting our values, which we'll talk about right after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and I'm joined this morning by Mike Carter, and we're talking about liberty, security, and values in wake of the 2024 election. Man, things are going to be different from a liberty standpoint, a security standpoint. And one thing on security that we didn't cover is the idea of the government bursting down your door and weaponized FBI pointing guns at you and saying, hey, you buddy, you prayed in front of a abortion clinic and you impeded people getting an abortion, you're under arrest.
That's a bit concerning, but what drove that home was that famous squirrel, Peanut.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I think that was literally a reality check. I mean, to put the resources they put behind that and then euthanize Peanut, crazy. I mean,
no, but it woke America up. But not just Peanut the squirrel, but also
the raccoon or something.
Freddy the raccoon as well. And that goes to values. Are our values to be good to the environment, to be good to our animals, friends, and such? You know, I want PETA to come out and just attack New York for that. PETA needs to say, what are you doing? I mean, that guy had literally taken a baby and turned it into a pet for its safety and security, to protect the animal.
It couldn't go back in the wild, got separated from its mom, and looked like he had a great relationship with the squirrel.
Yeah, no. So
the squirrel was enjoying life until the government came in.
That hits all three, liberty, security, and values. Liberty, should you have the freedom to adopt? If he was a professional, too. I'm not saying everybody should go find an animal in the wild, bring it home. This was a baby animal, and this was someone who has a rescue operation that rescues animals, and it was the only, and it was very popular on the internet. And then security, somebody burst down your home, arrested you because, or detained you because you had a pet squirrel in your house. And then values, where are American values? That doesn't fit with American values. You know, and here's another one. This was a big one. They tried to make this the number one issue in the campaign. Trump was talking about border security. He was talking about inflation and the American dream, and he was talking about free speech. What was the number one value of the Harris campaign?
The number one value? I don't really know if they had a value, to be honest with you. But there was a lot of identity politics.
Pro-choice.
And I keep hearing all that.
Pro-choice yes. was the number
That's true,
one.
The abortion argument, absolutely, yes. My body, my choice. I heard a bit of that out there.
Yeah. And so they were like, Trump is in favor of a national abortion ban. Now, whether you like that or not, he was not in favor of a national abortion ban.
No.
Melania, who wrote a beautiful book, came out and said that she's pro-choice and all that. And he talks about Melania in her book. And you see the love between them when he talked. I'm so proud of her. She's got the number one book in America and all that. That's in his victory speech. I love that.
No, but we saw that made it. It is state choice. We saw it on the referendum. I think three states passed something let the abortion still move forward.
Loosened abortion restrictions. Yeah. And one state, which was Florida, actually rejected this thing that would have been like Minnesota. I mean, let's be honest. Tim Walz had an abortion up to the point of and even after birth abortion. And when I say after birth, what I mean is literally if the baby was born alive in a botched abortion, they could let it die on the table. Where are those in values?
Yeah.
Even if you're pro-choice, you can't support that. And the American people don't support
that. But he didn't want to say it out loud when he was asked about it. But you look at his policies and what he's doing, and it's clearly there. And then, I heard the TV commentators saying, oh, this is horrible because now Trump's going to take this mandate and he's going to make this a national piece. Trump's been pretty clear. It's going to be run by the states, and that's where it's going to go. I don't see that becoming a Senate issue. I certainly believe in pro-life. For me, it's hard to imagine killing any baby, but I don't see that that's going to be one of the key issues. But they want to make it an issue.
They want to make. President Reagan said it best. He said, "I've noticed that everyone who's in favor of abortion has already been born."
Yeah.
Right. So, but you know, women are divided on this issue. It's not a uniform thing. And actually, the feminist movement to get women the right to vote was to protect children. And there are a lot of women who say, I want to protect children. So that is a very delicate, difficult issue, and it is subject to state referendum and subject to state rights. It is now removed out of, it's not mandatory from the federal government. Roe v. Wade was terrible law. Trump was right about that. Every legal scholar would admit that. On the other hand, it is a delicate issue. It's a very challenging issue. I'm pro-life. I believe that life begins at conception. And if you believe that, then abortion is not good, right? But there are other people who have different views. The point here is they tried to make it a national issue, and Trump said, I've left it to the states. And it looks like that's where America is. They'd prefer it at the state level, not at the federal level.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, great that he was able to accomplish what he's able to accomplish, to actually see Roe versus Wade readdressed, taken to the Supreme Court, handled the right way, given back to the states, and thousands of lives are being saved because of it right now.
Yeah, you know, the Democrats, had they won, they were planning on packing the court. They said it outright. They didn't hide it. She said she was in favor of it. Biden said court reform and all of that. Here's what I suggest, and I really do. I suggest that President Trump threatened to pack the court. They come out and say,
"Interesting.
I want to pack the court. I'm going to add three new justices right away." And the Democrats, of course, will scream, "No, you can't do that." And then a Republican senator should come up and say, "Maybe we should have a constitutional amendment that limits the court so that we don't pack it." Because court packing is such a stupid idea. The next time you have a different president, they'll pack it and put, you know, we would have 150 members of the Supreme Court if we allowed court packing. Or worse than that, would be one party rule forever. And I do not want Republican Party guaranteed rule forever. I think you have to have at least two parties so that you can have an opposition, yes, to keep people in check. Yes. I'm not in favor of the Republicans setting the rules so the Democrats could never, ever win again. I don't like that idea.
That's a real solution. I love that. I hope we can get that message up to the thought leaders up there to get that done. I think you'll figure out a way to do it.
Can you imagine the Democrats that were just, "Oh, no, you can't pack the court. Yeah, no, no, no." They would support the amendment, so we'd have bipartisan support. We'd pass it. We'd have nine justices, and we'd stick with that. And I think that would be good for America.
That's good. I saw Mitch McConnell, Senator McConnell, to his credit, it says he wants to continue with the filibuster, so he's not going to give that up, but they wanted to give that up again too, if they had control, yep, so they could just ram everything
and
through.
They want to make Puerto Rico and DC states. They want to do all kinds of things to guarantee. I don't want that. I wouldn't want to divide Texas up into five states so that we had 10 no. senators either. I don't like that idea. All right, so let's talk. We're talking values. Abortion's one. Migrants being forced on small towns that don't assimilate into the culture. I don't know whether they're eating cats and pets or not in Springfield, but I know that Springfield, Ohio was inundated where a third of their population was brought in by illegal immigration, placed there, pushed there, and they were flown there. So they weren't illegal. They were through some stupid provision that allowed them to fly them in, but they were not citizens, and they were not made
changing
citizens.
The culture, changing the school system, public services, housing costs overnight, and those people, and this has been proven out, those people that are living there saying, I need to move now. I mean, this is not a place that you can't change things that quickly overnight. There's a reason we have legal immigration. There's a reason we have these laws so that we can build the right infrastructure. We can have that melting pot of values and so forth, unless you have a different plan, which is just upset the system and overload the system.
That is Clara Piven's strategy, mm-hmm, where you literally let people in to overload the system. I believe in legal immigration. I think there are a lot of wonderful people who want to be a part of the American experiment that is a constitutional republic that elects its officials through democratic means, where people have freedom and liberty and opportunity to build and run businesses and raise their families according to their values.
Look at Elon Musk, perfect example, right? Look at the impact he's having on the economy, potentially on our security. He was an immigrant. He came here, and I guess there's a little controversy if he overstayed a visa or not, but once Biden was trying to make it a political issue. But we want those types of thought leaders here that can help make America better.
Oh, absolutely. And people that aspire to be Americans, but not people who say, "I want to turn America into the country I left." Mm-hmm. I don't want that at all. I don't think any nation on earth wants that or would ever allow.
You know, as we look at those values, this identity politics thing, I heard Lieutenant Colonel on West say, "Hey, we're done with identity politics." I think a certain segment of the population is. I don't think the media is. I don't think that the folks I heard in the Democratic Party are ready to give that up. I was watching the View. Yes, I watched it just because I knew we're going to be talking about what people are saying out there. They were making a big deal out of this.
Is that still on the View?
Yes, unfortunately. But my wife's like,
"It won't
what
be
are you
on
doing?"
They all promised to leave the country, didn't they?
Well, Sonny came out and I had to look who she was. Cause I didn't know what she was. But she was talking civil rights. She was talking about if it would have been a white person running, it would have been a different story. We've got to get rid of that. Diversity, equity, inclusion has caused more harm than good. We want everybody to be treated
fairly.
When I
hear young black males who voted for Trump are racist because they voted for Trump, that's the worst kind of identity. Wait a minute. They're black. They're young. And they're males. Why is it that they're racist automatically? Well, they voted for Trump. No, that's got to go away.
And you're being told how to vote if you're black, or you're being told what to do there.
Wait a minute, isn't that the definition of racism?
And in Sonny's case here, I pray for her and that she gets freed from whatever she's dealing with out there. But she's like, it's the uneducated women that voted for Trump. That's the problem. It's those uneducated white women. And then later she corrected as well. Non-college educated women.
Women dominate colleges today. There are fewer men in colleges. Women dominate college. Mark Cuban said almost the same thing and had to apologize. Mark Cuban said that Trump will allow smart women and strong women around him.
I think he did apologize.
He had to apologize. Yeah. So bottom line, identity politics is going away. The war on Christmas hopefully has gone away. I saw Kamala Harris, how dare you say Merry Christmas? We'll say the war on Christians, freedom of religion will be back. And this whole drag queen story hour, hopefully that is done. And I hope that the men in women's sports, you know, that boxer turned out actually to be a male, XY chromosomes, mm-hmm. and actually had male body parts. Beating up on a woman, that should never be allowed again. Riley Gaines is right. We ought to have women's sports for women. Women ought to be respected and honored, and men ought to be respected and honored. This is nonsense, this gender politics.
And these are the types of ideas I saw even white suburban women, 51% for Trump, even white suburban women who they thought, the Democratic Party thought they owned that. That wasn't the case because people are seeing this cultural disconnect here.
Nobody should own anything. They ought to compete to get the votes of individual Americans, not, if you ain't black unless you're voting for me. No. And we had Donna Jackson on the Economic War Room where we talked through a lot of these issues. We've got to end DEI and ESG, which is harming minorities. It's not helping them, and it's harming our economy. It's harming, you know, liberty, security, and values, all three. All right, Mike, we got one more thing to talk about in segment four. Where are we with pirate money legislation, and what does the Trump victory mean for that going forward? We'll be right back.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, we've been talking about the election and how it's going to impact liberty. I think it's going to increase liberty. I think it's going to increase security. I think it's going to benefit values. I think all three. But we still have some serious problems. One of the problems is $36 trillion in federal debt and the interest off the charts. How do we address that? What can Trump do? I'm hoping Elon Musk can get in and cut the size of government. I mean, he did it with Twitter, 80% firing, and X runs better than Twitter ever did. And they're not, because so many of those people were woke nonsense, or they were there only to suppress free speech.
Yeah. But we're still clicking along. And until we see this kind of disruption of how do we get more efficient, how do we get rid of the bureaucracy that exists out there, $1 trillion in debt every 90 days. And that means we're going to have to continue to print the money. It means we've got to figure out how to have fair weights and measures. We've got to get this pirate money initiative going.
And they only have 4 years under Trump. Hopefully, we get somebody else good after Trump. But 4 years under Trump to get the massive debt under control. Now, Milei's done it in Argentina, but it does not come without pain. For example, if you cut $2 trillion out of our federal budget immediately, a lot of people are going to lose jobs. And that means unemployment's going to go up. That's going to hurt. But I will tell you this. Right now, the federal government spending is actually negative compared to what if you put that same money in people's pockets. Federal government, when they spend money, it used to have a multiplier effect. Economists would call it the government multiplier effect. It used to be you get 4 times return, 8 times return, 2 times return. It is now actually technically negative. When they spend money, it's actually going to hurt more in the long run of the economy than if they did not spend it. But there's pain as you transition.
So we're losing as they print it, we're losing the velocity of money. It's just kind of sitting in these bureaucratic things and not getting to the people.
And it's creating these massive wealth gaps, which mm-hmm. we talk about all the time, the massive wealth gap from excess, this candle on effect. And then so what their answer has been, up till now is they, well, when the dollar fails, we'll just plug in central bank digital currency. That was the government official answer. And guess what President Trump said? No, 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 I'm going to outlaw that. We will not do that. So here is Technocracy News, November 3rd. Failure pending central bank digital currency CBDC projects are foundering in 5i nations.
Yeah. Well, we kind of knew that, you know, implementing this and getting these nations to agree is not going to be easy. But they are still kind of agreeing to a settlement system, right? And different ways to go outside of the kind of the dollar at this point.
Yeah, well, all right. So you've got Canada and Australia shelving their plans for retail central bank digital currency. Do you know why they're doing that? Not because the technology doesn't exist. It exists perfectly and they can implement it now, but because the people do not want it.
Yes.
And so we're going to make COVID vaccines available to anyone in the privileged class. If you're older or if you have these health issues or whatever, you get that and people lined up to get them. But when they realized people didn't really want them, what did they next do?
And they mandated it.
Exactly.
Yes. And we'll see that same path.
That is the path that is intended today, is the mandate of central bank digital currency. So they put it on the shelf to bring it back as soon as they can, you know, and they put it on the shelf for a financial or economic crisis.
Yeah. And we're still, and not just us, but you look at China, you look at the global debt around the world, you look at the central banks that are buying gold as a hedge against something coming up. There are still some, you know, threats on the horizon that are pretty precarious out there.
And the intention is 90 countries 2 years ago had planned central bank digital currency, according to the Atlantic Council CBDC tracker. 2.5 years later, that number has increased to 134, representing 98% of global GDP. This is the ultimate dream. This is how we take over and never have to worry about elections again, because we control people through their money. And that is one world government, one world money system, and so forth. This is the big problem. And Trump said, I will not endorse or support this. But what happens if there's a financial crisis?
Correct. And what happens after Trump? Trump buys us maybe 4 more years. We don't know what's going to happen after that.
Maybe. But COVID caused him to shut the economy down. This is not Trump plans.
Yes.
There's no way Trump would close the economy. But it's 15 days to slow the spread. And then all these people surrounding him, like Anthony Fauci and others, Dr. Fauci, you know, and they start pushing it out. What would they do if we have an economic crisis and they said, Mr. President, here's a solution we've worked out, and the technology is good. Hopefully he knows better. I believe he does. I really, truly does. I don't think he's ever going to fall for that again. But what if something happened to him?
Right, right. And again, what if there's a change? And we don't know what that's going to be. And the thing is to be prepared now and to make sure we're taking advantage of those state rights that we have in Article 1, Section 10, that allows for states to have their own legal tender as long as it's backed by gold and silver. I saw the crypto market is up with expectations that Trump is going to do something with that. But that's not in the Constitution yet that I've seen.
Right.
So we've got to continue to focus on this grassroots movement we're seeing across America. And I think that's one thing I was really excited about when I looked at the maps the other day, because all of a sudden you saw this sea of red all across the U.S. And I don't care if you're watching CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, there was this like, there's red everywhere. And this was the counties. There was 1,000 counties that Trump was up 3% over previous, and zero where Kamala was up 3% over Biden's previous records. That 3% was the small ships. Kevin, that's what you talk about all the time in economic war room. It's the miracle of the small ships. It's the people in the rural counties getting together with their friends and saying, hey, let's make this happen. And that's what we're seeing happen with pirate money out there, this movement across America on multiple states where it's people standing together to make sure their voice is being heard, to make sure this legislation is moving forward. But if we don't work together, if we don't stand together with one voice, it will not happen.
This is our time. We have to strike while the iron is hot. Trump has a mandate. This is the time he wants to give power back to the states. Mm-hmm. He said that publicly. He did that on the abortion issue and others. Money needs to go back to the states. Gold is actually a little cheaper because the world seems a little more peaceful. So the price of gold has come down, making it a little more affordable and make it a little easier to implement. But he got a mandate. In fact, even CNN, we've got a clip where CNN talks about how he actually got a mandate. Let's roll that clip.
This is a mandate. He's won the national popular vote for the first time since, for a Republican, for the first time since 2004. This is a big deal. This isn't backing into the office. This is a mandate to do what you said you were going to do. Get the economy working again for regular working class Americans. Fix immigration. Try to get crime under control. Try to reduce the chaos in the world. This is a mandate from the American people to do that. I think I'm interpreting the results tonight as the revenge of just the regular old working class American, the anonymous American who has been crushed, insulted, condescended to. They're not garbage. They're not Nazis. They're just regular people who get up and go to work every day and are trying to make a better life for their kids, and they feel like they have been told to just shut up when they have complained about the things that are hurting them in their own lives. I also feel like this election, as we sit here and pore over this tonight, is something of an indictment of the political information complex. I mean, we've been sitting around here for the last couple of weeks, and the story that was portrayed was not true. I mean, we were told Puerto Rico was going to change the election. Liz Cheney, Nikki Haley voters, women lying to their husbands. Before that, it was Tim Walz in the camo hats. Night after night after night, we were told all these things and gimmicks were going to somehow push Harris over the line. And we were just ignoring the fundamentals. Inflation, people feeling like that they were barely able to tread water at best. That was the fundamentals of the election. And so I think that both parties should always look at the results of an election and figure out what went right and what went wrong. But I think for all of us who cover elections and talk about elections and do this on a day-to-day basis, we have to figure out how to understand, talk to, and listen to the half of the country that rose up tonight and said, we've had enough.
You know what? We need to stand up and say we've had enough. And, you know, we've been supporting things with our phones and our expenses and our money that are not good. There are only three things you can do with your money other than perhaps, you know, throwing it away. You can give it, you can spend it, or you can invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in ways that support liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the economic war room and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. Now, I want to make it clear, we don't sell gold or silver here, but we think we should have sound money and the little ships, the people who stand up and say, look, I'm tired of you printing so much money and making my bank account worth less from inflation. I want something that gives me liberty, security, and values in my money. And I think, Mike, what you're working on, how do you think this is going to impact our pirate money legislation?
Well, I think people are going to feel empowered that they do have that one voice. And we saw legislators across the country, many of them been busy, as I've been talking to them about transactional gold and silver, because they've been trying to get reelected, and they've been reelected, and they're ready to go. Some have moved from rep to senator, but excited to get this legislation moving forward as they get into 2025. And what I also heard, even from the left, was Trump does have a mandate. Now, they were hoping he doesn't overplay it. But they say there is a mandate out there, and that's the power of us all standing together with one voice.
Yeah, no, that mandate is here, and it's our opportunity. Strike while the iron is hot. Let's go back to the original analogy. Goliath's head's cut off. That doesn't mean there aren't other giants like the debt and other threats to America, like Iran and so forth, that we've got to fix that. But we have their army on the run. The Philistine army is now on the run. Let's chase them out while we have the opportunity. No more color revolutions. No more inflation. Let's find sound fiscal policy. Let's promote liberty, security, and values for the American people. This is our moment. We may never get a moment again. So we need to call those small ships together and work together. Mike, how do we support pirate money legislation?
Well, go to transactionalgold.com.
To learn more?
Yeah, learn more there. And Pirate Money book, learn more about that as well.
Okay, get us on your podcast. Till next week, this is Kevin Freeman and Pirate Money Radio.